Its paintings, therefore, appear ingeniously light and graceful. The dream fantasy, however, does not stop at the mere representation of the object, but is impelled from within to mingle with the object more or less of the dream ego, and in this way to produce an action. The visual dream, e.g., depicts gold coins in the street. The dreamer picks them up, rejoices, and carries them away. According to Scherner, the material upon which the dream fantasy exerts its artistic activity is preponderantly that of the organic sensory stimuli which are so obscure during the day, Comp. page 29. Hence the fantastic theory of Scherner, and the perhaps over-sober theories of Wundt and other physiologists, though otherwise diametrically opposed, agree perfectly in their assumption of the dream sources and dream excitants. But whereas, according to the physiological theory, the psychic reaction to the inner physical stimuli becomes exhausted with the awakening of any ideas suitable to these stimuli, these ideas then, by way of association, calling to their aid other ideas, and with this stage the chain of psychic processes seeming to terminate according to Scherner, the physical stimuli only supply the psychic force with the material which it may render subservient to its fantastic intentions. For Scherner, the formation of the dream only commences where in the conception of others it comes to an end. The treatment of the physical stimuli by the dream fantasy surely cannot be considered purposeful. The fantasy plays a tantalizing game with them, and represents the organic source which gives origin to the stimuli in the correspondent dream in any plastic symbolism. Indeed, Scherner holds the opinion, not shared by Volkelt and others, that the dream fantasy has a certain favorite representation for the entire organism. This representation would be the house. Fortunately, however, it does not seem to limit itself in its presentation to this material. It may also conversely employ a whole series of houses to designate a single organ, e.g., very long rows of houses for the intestinal excitation. On other occasions, particular parts of the house actually represent particular parts of the body, as, e.g., in the headache dream, the ceiling of the room, which the dream sees covered with disgusting reptile-like spiders, represents the head. Quite irrespective of the house symbolism, any other suitable object may be employed for the representation of these parts of the body which excite the dream. Thus the breathing lungs find their symbol in the flaming stove with its gaseous roaring, the heart in hollow boxes and baskets, the bladder in round, bag-shaped or simply hollowed objects. The male dream of sexual excitement makes the dreamer find in the street the upper portion of a clarinet, next to it the same part of a tobacco pipe, and next to that a piece of fur. The clarinet and tobacco pipe represent the appropriate shape of the male sexual organ, while the fur represents the pubic hair. In the female sexual dream, the tightness of the closely approximated thighs may be symbolized by a narrow courtyard surrounded by houses, and the vagina by a very narrow, slippery, and soft footpath leading through the courtyard, upon which the dreamer is obliged to walk in order, perhaps, to carry a letter to a gentleman. Volkelt, page 39. It is particularly noteworthy that at the end of such a physically exciting dream, the fantasy, as it were, unmasks by representing the exciting organ or its function unconcealed. Thus the tooth-exciting dream usually ends with the dreamer taking a tooth out of his mouth. The dream fantasy may, however, not only direct its attention to the shape of the exciting organ, but it may also make the substance contained therein the object of the symbolization. Thus the dream of intestinal excitement, e.g., may lead us through muddy streets, the bladder-exciting dream to foaming water, or the stimulus itself, the manner of its excitation, and the object it covets are represented symbolically, or the dream ego enters into a concrete combination with the symbolization of its own state, as, e.g., when in the case of painful stimuli, we struggle desperately with vicious dogs or raging bulls, or when in the sexual dream the dreamer sees herself pursued by a naked man. Disregarding all the possible prolixity of elaboration, a symbolizing fantastic activity remains as the central force of every dream. Volkelt, in his finely and fervently written book, next attempted to penetrate further into the character of this fantasy, and to assign to the psychical activity thus recognized its position in a system of philosophical ideas, which, however, remains altogether too difficult of comprehension for any one who is not prepared by previous schooling for the sympathetic comprehension of philosophical modes of thinking. Scherner connects no useful function with the activity of the symbolizing fantasy in dreams. In the dream, the psyche plays with the stimuli at its disposal. One might presume that it plays in an improper manner. One might also ask us whether our thorough study of Scherner's dream theory, the arbitrariness and deviation of which from the rules of all investigation are only too obvious, can lead to any useful results. It would then be proper for us to forestall the rejection of Scherner's theory without examination by saying that this would be too arrogant. This theory is built up on the impression received from his dreams by a man who paid great attention to them, and who would appear to be personally very well fitted to trace obscure psychic occurrences. Furthermore, it treats a subject which, for thousands of years, has appeared mysterious to humanity, though rich in its contents and relations, and for the elucidation of which stern science, as it confesses itself, has contributed nothing beyond attempting, in entire opposition to popular sentiment, to deny the substance and significance of the object. Finally, let us frankly admit that apparently we cannot avoid the fantastical in our attempts to elucidate the dream. There are also fantastic ganglia cells. The passage cited on page 63 from a sober and exact investigator like Bintz, which depicts how the aurora of awakening flows along the dormant cell masses of the cerebrum, is not inferior in fancifulness and in improbability to Scherner's attempts at interpretation. I hope to be able to demonstrate that there is something actual underlying the latter, though it has only been indistinctly observed and does not possess the character of universality entitling it to the claim of a dream theory. For the present, Scherner's theory of the dream in its contrast to the medical theory may perhaps lead us to realize between what extremes the explanation of dream life is still unsteadily vacillating. H. Relations between the dream and mental diseases. When we speak of the relation of the dream to mental disturbances, we may think of three different